Those who admit the existence of extraterrestrial worlds seem to be recruited above all among astronomers and physicists, Sagan, Drake, Morrison, while the majority of the most prominent experts in evolutionary biology, Simpson, Francois, May, affirm that the Earth is probably the only planet on which there is intelligent life, at least, emphasize the reticent ones, among those in our galaxy. Naturally, the latter support all their arguments on data referring to the current knowledge of terrestrial science. And they do not hesitate to entrench themselves obstinately behind that kind of great wall of China of formulas and equations, which, when push comes to shove, do not hold up in the least against the avalanche of UFO testimonies from people, direct witnesses, of the most varied social condition, of different cultural levels and originating from countries very far from each other, and not only geographically speaking. There are, if not, the cases that we review here, among hundreds, chosen in the course of my recent and quick readings, limiting myself to encounters carried out by our compatriots, in the European Latin area. First we give the floor to a great scholar of the UFO subject, there, Antonio Ribera, from Barcelona, has done us the honor of writing the prologue to this book, and who, in one of his most recent works, tells us about the case of Jaime Bordersbly, a former meteorologist, whom Ribera himself describes as an extraordinary character in many ways. Interview by Antonio Ribera with Jaime Bordersbly, J. B. B.S. Encounter with an extraterrestrial took place in June 1951 in the village of Castle, on the western slope of the Canigó Mountains, in the lands of Rousillon. It is a convincing testimony. We reproduce it in full because it not only offers curious coincidences with my own experience but, in addition, I must emphasize that that encounter took place a little more than 30 years before mine and that barely 18 kilometers separate, as the crow flies, both places. The enigmatic character of Canigó. My friend Borders is an extraordinary character in many ways, a former meteorologist. He became one of the leading figures in Andorra, at the time when the incident takes place, June 1951, he ran a small hotel located at the foot of Canigó, in the village of Castle or Castland a little above the seaside resort of Vimont-les-Bains. The name of the hotel was Hostel de l'Isard, Hostel of the Chamois. At the beginning of the summer of 1951, Jaime was resting in the courtyard of the Hostel de l'Isard, under the shade of some pear trees. Through the door of the terrace that looked out onto the side of the mountain and the valley of Cadí, an individual appeared and stopped at the entrance. "Bonjour," he said, standing to attention, while bowing slightly with his whole body. Jaime returned the greeting mechanically, examining him carefully. The individual in question was tall, 2 meters. His walk was slow and his voice had sounded in a low tone but with a clear timbre, which without being excessively masculine did not correspond to his physique. What most attracted his attention, besides his strange voice and his peculiar manners, was his appearance and his way of dressing. He was wearing very tight trousers, like tights where all the muscles of his thighs stood out, under that indefinable color, of blue, petroleum and grayish tones. His long and perfect legs recalled those of a Greek statue, perhaps too long in proportion to the rest of his body. He wore mid-calf boots, one piece, without eyelets, tight, very black, made of a kind of extraordinarily matte leather. His torso was pressed by a blouse in which a one-finger-thick border stood out around the neck. The blouse was a little loose, not as tight as the trousers, but showing off her figure. It reached to her waist, finished with a strap, like a narrow belt, closed by contact, like the central opening. It should be noted that contact closures, such as Velcro, for example, had not yet been invented. The blouse was also closed by 2 cords around her wrists. This detail made Jaime notice the hands of the stranger. They were hands with thin, elongated fingers, beautiful, very effeminate, smooth, white, without hair or prominent veins. Despite his narrow waist, he had an athletic body and was quite broad-shouldered. His overalls were rather fine, with a notable slenderness, and he did not appear to have a single gram of fat. As for his complexion, it was white, slightly pink, beardless. Her hair was light blonde, falling to her shoulders in a manner similar to that of Adamski's famous Venusian with wide waves and turned slightly inwards at the bottom. Her face was elongated, with a perfectly drawn mouth, more sensual than cold, with slightly full and well-formed lips. When she spoke, she showed normal, healthy teeth. Her nose was straight without being classic, somewhat flattened at the nostrils, but above them it continued to be pointed. She had very large, almond-shaped eyes, a clear blue, so clear that her gaze gave the impression of being somewhat faded, but full of vitality. There were the eyes of a very beautiful woman, disturbing, almost unfathomable and with a kind of magnetic penetration. When the stranger cast her enigmatic gaze on him, Jaime experienced the sensation of being pierced through and through. He could not hold her gaze or fix his pupils on those eyes. Every time he tried, he felt intimidated, even though the stranger looked at him attentively and respectfully. His eyebrows were very fine, forming a blonde line under an enormously spacious forehead. He spoke without gesturing, his face and hands did not move. His arms rested on the table, still as well. He gave the impression that his whole body was pure voice, emerging with the same pitch, very pleasant, without inflections, without highs or lows, soft, but at the same time penetrating and clear. He spoke in a chemically pure voice without any particular regional accent standing out. He used a highly technical vocabulary, however, he expressed everything with simplicity and clarity. He appeared to be between 30 and 35 years old. "I would like to ask you a favor. Sit down," Jaime invited him kindly. The stranger sat down in a chair next to him. Being so close to him, he noticed that the fabric of his dress had a special texture, smooth, apparently without fibers, like foam. "I have come to see you to ask you a favor," the stranger continued. "If it is in my power, I expect from your kindness that you will provide me every day, at this time, a couple of bottles of milk and bread." "I am not dedicated to selling what you ask for," Jaime replied. "This is a restaurant." "I know," admitted the stranger, "but I cannot speak to anyone else in this town. If you do not sell me what I ask, you will cause extortion."
"And why extortion?"
"I have no documents or money," he explained. "Besides, I must make sure that I am seen walking around your house as little as possible." Jaime thought that his mysterious interlocutor could be a persecuted person or a political fugitive. Meanwhile, the stranger looked at him fixedly with a face that lit up, but without actually smiling. In reality, he never saw him smile, only at certain moments his whole face cleared up. It seemed that he smiled internally, without any external sign, as if physical life gave way to internal, spiritual life. Jaime agreed to the request. "Thank you very much," said his strange visitor with that indefinable expression. "Tomorrow you can come and pick up the bread and milk, I will go to the village to get it." The Hostel de l'Isard was located at the very entrance to the town. Suddenly, Jaime asked him, "Where are you coming from?"
"From above."
"Are you in Mariels or near Kildaju?"
"From above," repeated the stranger.
Jaime did not want to insist. He would have liked to know the identity of this strange character, but he restrained himself. A quarter of an hour before he left, he made him promise that he would be very discreet and would not reveal his presence to anyone, agreeing to return the next day at the same time. Indeed, at the agreed time he appeared again, made the same kind of greeting as the day before and went to sit directly next to Jaime. "I would like to know what you are doing for this region," said Jaime, trying not to give too much importance to his words.
"I have come with a scientific mission," he replied. "I will tell you later what it is about."
"Are you a scientist?" The stranger nodded his head.
"What branch of science are you interested in?"
"Many," he replied, asking in turn,
"Are you also interested in science?"
"Yes, quite a lot."
"Well, you should know that this mountains is very interesting for science. The Kaniga Mountains are very rich in minerals, but it also has other things that you would never be able to understand. He spoke to him kindly, as if he were dealing with a child of 10 or 12 years old. He explained things clearly and without the slightest hint of pride or arrogance. He limited himself to talking to him about Kanigo. Among other things, he told him that it was a mountain of iron, magnetic. Perhaps this unexpected information explained the frequent plane crashes that have been recorded and whose history, since 1945, includes a tragic list of 11 catastrophes, with a total of 229 deaths. Possibly the compasses of the planes were deviated by the magnetic force of the mountain. On the third day, surprised by the few needs that the individual showed to have, he asked him, "Don't you want me to bring you something else from the village?" "I have enough already," he replied in his usual tone of voice. "I like you," he insisted, trying to break the kind of ice that separated them. "If you need anything else, just tell me." "I don't need anything at all," the visitor interrupted. After a short pause he continued, "I only eat bread and milk." This statement did not surprise him too much. Jaime had been a vegetarian for many years, so he attributed this rather sober diet to a purely dietary issue. "Maybe he's sick," he thought to himself. With singular naturalness, the stranger began to develop deeper themes, of a curious social nature. "The French regime is retrograde," he told him among other things, adding, "Of course, the planet we are on is made up of a dislocated society. Everything is on the way to being fixed, but nothing is yet sustainable." From his words and from the concepts he expressed, which he sometimes only understood in a confused way, he seemed to her to be a true communist. This ideological concept that she had formed of the stranger was reaffirmed when she heard him say, "There is a country that is only an embryo of what the world of the future will be, but it is only an embryo." Jaime listened to him more and more interestedly. "It is necessary to eradicate egoism from man, completely. You think it is something congenital, but no, it is not at all. Although the task of expelling it will be very hard." He paused. It seemed that his words were surging through all parts of his body, provoking a kind of fascination that he could not escape. "Man considers himself alone on Earth and does not know that he is only one of the elements of evolution. With all his excessive pride, with all his pretended wisdom, he does not know that on planet Earth there is an animal, now in the process of evolution, that in time will replace him. At present he cannot suspect that something is already being prepared that will surpass him. I would like to know what kind of animals." The intense and fixed gaze of the stranger cut off the question. More and more embarrassed, he was forced to look away from him. And again, without knowing how, the conversation began. One of the subjects he insisted on was that of the hidden forces that man now believes he can control. "Man has been given many powers to control a great number of extraordinary forces, but he does not know it. And if he misuses them, he will only achieve the precipitation of his own holocaust and the appearance of that thing that will come later. Man must wait. He must know how to wait, be patient, without futilely burning through the stages. Only then will it be possible for the present man to connect with this future thing." He was increasingly convinced that the mysterious visitor was a Russian. This opinion was shared by the few inhabitants of Kastl, who had seen this bizarre, strange being, as they classified him in their Amsilan patois. Especially when they heard him say, "We can avoid the cataclysm that the capitalist powers can provoke." In another snippet of their conversations he said, "Your children will see the end of religions. At least as they are structured today." Speaking of the post-war generation and the rebellion of the children, he said, "Revolutions will only come from the youth." With his thoughts plainly expressed, he seemed to foresee a real mutation of the youth. The unknown had already been in Kastl for 4 or 5 days, and despite his precautions, he had become the talk of the town. One morning, while they were both sitting in the courtyard, Jaime's son came out, called by him and carrying a camera in his hands. "Dad will take a photo of you." But the unknown stared at him and refused, saying in a sharp tone, "No. No, thank you." At the boy's insistence, his face changed for the first time, taking on a very strange expression. Finally he agreed, saying, "Well, do it. It's useless anyway. It's not worth it." Jaime took not one, but two photographs. When developing the film, a few days later, when the stranger had already said goodbye to Jaime, the two frames corresponding to that pair of exposures appeared blank. The film appeared completely transparent, with no signs of emulsion. The other six frames of the same film, 6x9 size, came out well, showing familiar scenes. The event remains as inexplicable now as when it took place. On the day of the photographs, the stranger insisted on a subject that, without a doubt, was very dear to him, that of the perversity of man who, according to him, was already coming to an end. After a few days, Jaime, unable to control his growing curiosity any longer, decided to follow the steps of the stranger without him noticing. When he left the Hostel de l'Isard, he began to follow him as discreetly as possible. After crossing the bridge over the Cadi River, he went up again towards the Caldaju. With no small surprise, he saw that the stranger was climbing without any effort, as if the slope was descending gently instead of ascending rapidly. His step was so regular and elastic, he was climbing like a feather. Always keeping the same distance, he saw him reach the top of the slope. There, in the thick forest, a being was waiting for him, looking and dressed the same as the stranger, although a little shorter in stature. He had the impression that it was a woman. The two beings, without greeting each other, continued up the mountain, entering a small wood. Jaime was forced to follow them on the heights, hiding among the bushes, trying not to lose sight of them for a single moment. The stranger and his identical companion stopped in a small clearing in the forest. In the center of it, in a kind of clearing, he saw something that looked like a low tent, not square but oval or circular, with the central part raised higher. Its color was like metallic gray. No matter how hard he tried, he could not see the entire surface of the tent. The man was standing in front of the tent, which was about 200 meters away. A seasoned mountaineer, he was stupefied by this type of tent. If it was, it was a very rare type of tent at the time, used only by Himalayan expeditions and on Paul Emile Victor's polar missions. The two mysterious characters began to walk around the tent. Jaime did not want to be inconvenient and indiscreet and decided to leave. But his curiosity was not satisfied. The first thing he did when the stranger returned to the hostel, with his usual punctuality, was to suddenly ask him the following question: "But what exactly are you doing here?" The stranger adopted his usual posture, looking at him without taking his lips off. "What is your name?" he insisted, with the same result. Agreed, but not satisfied by the imperturbable attitude of the stranger, he gave up asking him more questions for the moment. It was almost certain that he was there clandestinely. Slowly the conversation began again, revolving as always on social issues. Suddenly the stranger asked the question, "And you, what do you do socially?" "Well, I don't belong to any political party," replied Jaime, "but I am very socially advanced. You have the obligation to develop more social activity. You don't do enough in this field, because you, with the aptitudes that you have, are obliged to a social activity in accordance with your inner impulses." For a few moments, Jaime remained as if in suspense. How could the stranger know the conditions that concurred in him? What did he know about his life, both mental and physical? Reacting belatedly, he replied, "I don't have your capacity. Don't you realize that sometimes I can't follow the thread of your thoughts or understand them?" From that moment on, the stranger tried to make himself understood, explaining things until he understood them. The comment then was very unusual. He simply said, "Bon, then register." "Good, registered." He often used very technical language, just like a physics teacher would, using mathematical symbols that escaped his understanding. As expected, the curiosity of the inhabitants of the village could not remain unexpressed. Jean Pai, apple grower, questioned him as soon as he had the chance. "Who is this strange being who is going to visit you?" In the face of Jaime's silence, a little annoyed, Pi continued, "The other day I was in the apple orchard and when I saw him I shouted, 'Hey! Where are you going?' As he didn't pay attention to me, I insisted, 'Hey! Can't you hear me?' Then he turned around and looked at me in such a way that I was intimidated. You must know, my friend, that he is a very strange being. The fact is that I could not say another word to him. A few days later, when he was in the village, M. Nu's father, who held the position of mayor of the place, asked him, 'Who is this strange being who visits you?' The other day I greeted him but he did not even answer me. Thinking he was a foreigner and did not understand me, I said to him with gestures, 'And the papers? The documentation?' He looked at me so fixedly, with such intensity, that I thought I had offended him and I felt very intimidated. For a moment I had the feeling that my mouth was being covered with a gag. I could not say a word. 'Who is this individual? Do you know him?' 'You can rest easy,' Jaime replied. 'He is a good friend and an excellent person. He is certainly a foreigner and has come from very far away to visit me. I'll answer for him. But please don't say anything to the gendarmerie. It's not that anything could happen, but it would be annoying.' 'Ah, well, that's fine.' Jaime Borders was becoming more and more intrigued every day. 10 days had passed since the first visit of the stranger, who invariably showed up at the same time, to make a brief bow and then sit down to chat, sometimes in the shade of the trees, in the courtyard or in the dining room of the inn. Not once did he want to go into the bar. Then he would pick up his bread and milk and leave with his characteristic walk. That being represented an enigma, he had often formed different hypotheses, which he quickly discarded, becoming plunged into a chaos of agitated confusion. An infinite number of questions remained in his mind to which he could give no logical answer. Where had he come from? What was his origin? Was he an extraordinary man, born in some Nordic place? Was he a member of the underground resistance movement or a Soviet spy? What mission or purpose did he have to carry out in those lonely outskirts? As soon as she saw him appear, she went to meet him. Unable to control her impulses, she asked him almost point blank, "Hey, what are you doing up there?" He gave her one of his strange glances without parting his lips to utter a sound. Jaime insisted, "Keep in mind that I have answered for you. My prestige and perhaps my safety depend on your actions." The face of the unknown seemed to light up with a strange clarity and his cold pupils shone for a few seconds, but he remained silent. "I suppose you will not spend the day doing nothing," Jaime continued. "Can you not tell me what kind of mission has brought you here?" The lips of the unknown barely gave the sensation of moving. And for the first time he answered concisely to his insistent questions. "I am making the topographic map of Kanago." "It is an unnecessary job," Jaime replied. "There is already a direct plan of the general staff chart. I could easily get it for you. Any bookstore in Perpignan has it. I have already seen it. It is of no use to me." Suddenly, without knowing why, Jaime was struck by the clear tone of the stranger's face. He thought, logically, that it was impossible that, after 10 days climbing those cliffs, he could keep his complexion as fresh and rosy as that of a maiden. The high mountain sun burns intensely. It was enough to climb Kanago, 2,785 meters, Barbe Peak, 2,750 meters, Tres Vents Peak, 2,700 meters, Roja Peak, 2,600 meters, to show the effects of sunstroke. How is it possible that he keeps his face so white if he spends all day on the highest peaks? He wondered. Does he wear a veil or a gauze? Jaime waited in vain for an answer. The stranger once again adopted his typical silent attitude, while seeming to envelop him with the sharp look that emerged from the depths of his eyes. He came to think that the word "no," which he had never used, did not exist in his vocabulary. "Will you finish this work soon?" "Yes, in 2 or 3 days I will have it finished. Will you show it to me? I would like to see it." The shadow of a smile seemed to appear fleetingly. He turned around and started up the path to the heights. One day before his departure, the unknown made his usual appearance. This time he was carrying something in his hand, a metallic-looking tube from which he took out a map which he spread out on the table. It was a cartographic plan, neatly made, with the heights and contour lines perfectly drawn, reproducing with unusual fidelity the entire Kaniga Mountains. The type of paper used gave the sensation of a very smooth parchment, without folds and did not creak when handled. He recognized with great ease the layout that appeared before his eyes without any kind of letters or numbers, only a few indecipherable symbols could be distinguished. One of them was a kind of half moon on the contour lines. The ink used was black and the altitudes were not marked with Arabic numerals. The topography was perfect. When Jaime had satisfied his curiosity, the unknown folded the surprising map and put it back, not in the tube, but in a kind of folder with metal covers, which he had supposedly brought with him, but which had suddenly gone unnoticed by Jaime. Inside the folder there were other documents, as well as the tube. The topographical work to draw up that map with its detailed contour lines would have required the continued effort of a team of army topographers for at least 2 months. However, that mysterious being had carried it out, alone or with the help of his no less enigmatic companion, in just 15 days. And apparently with no more food than bread and milk. The fact itself was something disconcerting and incomprehensible. One more mystery to add to those surrounding the stranger. Although Jaime's surprises had not ended, the fantastic surveyor told him, "Don't bring me any more milk tomorrow. I won't be able to pay you." "It doesn't matter," he replied, understanding that this meant a farewell. "What I have learned from you during these 15 days is worth more, much more than the bread and milk that I have provided you." "I won't be able to pay you with money," continued the stranger, "because I don't have it, but I will give you something that is much more valuable to you." And he handed him a small package that he was carrying in his hand. Jaime had never noticed that the stranger's suit had pockets. Another detail that suddenly struck him was that, although he had always treated him like a man, he could not really be sure, because his shape from the waist down did not give signs of masculine attributes, but rather had a smooth, soft surface. When he opened the package, he saw that it contained a few stones. "Take them," the stranger told him. "They are gold nuggets." "Where did you get them?" "From the Kadi River. It is gold-bearing," he answered. "I can find as many as I want." Jaime did not doubt his statement for a moment. He was used to trusting his word completely. He had always had the impression that this unknown stranger could not lie. "Thank you. Have a good trip." "Where will you go?" "Will you go through Vimet? I ask you with the intention of accompanying you with my car to Villa Franca del Conflent, where you can take the train. Bear in mind that you have no documents to prove your identity." The unknown simply said, "Upstairs." As he walked away towards where he had set up camp, Jaime thought that he would go up the high mountains. There was no other explanation. Only now, after many years, does he believe that upstairs could mean something more. Although at the moment, under the influence of the powerful personality of the unknown, he believed him when he told him that those rounded stones that looked like ordinary pebbles or cobblestones were gold nuggets, later he began to doubt. Until finally he decided to take them to Perpignan in order to show them to his friends, the Ducamont brothers. Imagine his surprise at the overwhelming enthusiasm shown by the jewelers when they assured him that it was the purest gold. "Where did you find it?" they asked him eagerly. "Do you want us to join forces to exploit this vein?" Jaime did not want to reveal its origin, which greatly annoyed the jewelers. The unknown had paid with the magnificence of a king for the food he had provided. The value of the nuggets was much higher than the modest provisions he had consumed, more than 50,000 francs. With this coup de grace ended the hitherto inexplicable episode of Castel, at the foot of the Canigou. The confirmation of the encounter with an extraterrestrial character would be the best document in existence and the longest lasting. The alleged contacts of Adamski, Cedric Allingham, Truman Bethurum, Sirigusa, Daniel Fry and some others do not have as corroborative evidence as that of Castle, since everything in them depends on what the contact says. In the case of Canigan, the presence of a spacecraft, a disc or any other type of space vehicle is not recorded. The presence of the tent gives rise to many suppositions. Was it a disc-shaped, flattened, metallic gray means of transport, which Jaime took for the latest model tent?